Hello and welcome to Reawakening the Sacred Self, finding our way back to our ancestral soul, where we have gathered together Indigenous elders, wisdom keepers, inspirational speakers, visionaries, all to share the wisdom and guidance that will help us lead a more spiritual life that also enhances and strengthens our relationship with Mother Earth, who's the guardian of our ancestral soul. My name is Frances Billinghurst, the host for and the creatrix of this event, and I'm coming to you from Kaurna country, where the Kaurna people of Adelaide Plains are the traditional custodian. So, mani na padme, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining me. I am delighted to welcome Taria Ward. Welcome, Taria. Thank you very much for being part of this event.
Thank you for inviting me, Frances. It's so nice to meet you. And I just welcome your whole audience and ask blessings for all of us in this time together.
Wonderful. Thank you. For anyone who is not familiar with her work, Taria lives in Asheville, North Carolina in the United States, where she has a private practice offering dream analysis, psychological and spiritual guidance to clients all around the world. Taria has worked extensively with her own and other people's dreams for more than 45 years, and for nearly 30 years of those as an avid student of Indigenous ways of knowing and being. Taria also conducts retreats and vision quests. She teaches online courses, classes, lectures, and also offers oracle readings on request. So the title of Taria's presentation is Waking You to Your Dreams of the Night. As I said, Taria, I'm very delighted to be talking to you because dreams, we all dreams, regardless of whether we remember our dreams or not, whether we understand them. And that coming to understanding our dreams can be both fascinating as well as frustrating. There's so much information available as to how this can be done. So we can be sort of caught up in all the detail. But before we start unpacking the importance of dreams and how we can really take the advantage of these messages from our soul that comes through to us, for someone who has been working professionally with dreams, especially for as long as you have, just want to start off by asking you, how did you first become interested in this area?
Ooh, I love the question because I am grateful for my history of discovery of dreams at a very young age. First, as a child, I remember having very vivid dreams, and it's strange when I think back on it that I would have these vivid sort of go to this theater in the night where all these things were happening, and then noticing that nobody else talked about the dreams. And if I did, it didn't, it seemed like something that people weren't necessarily interested in. No, it wasn't engaging to people. So I just learned early on that this is a whole part of your life that we don't talk about. And I just found that so curious. And certainly I accepted it. I was going along with how things were until at age 24, I met a spiritual teacher. I met a woman who became my spiritual teacher. Her name was Henry Colton. And she was a very wise woman. And we studied all the world's religions and philosophies and sacred arts with her. But one of the main things that she taught her students to do was to pay attention to our dreams. One of her big books was called Watch Your Dreams, and to write them down every night. So this was age 24. I was quite young. And so starting at a really good, and with my history of not anybody talking about dreams, to find somebody who was talking about dreams and telling us to write them down, and then meeting a whole community of people where dreams were part of what we talked about all the time. It was people were talking as much about what was going on in their dream life as people do generally about the news or the gossip or whatever else is going on in the world. It was just part of general conversation for us. And the person who was my husband at the time for many years, we talked about our dreams all the time. And so it was, it became very important to me. And I was ordained in that ministry. And so I did a lot of speaking. And during all of that time, when I was writing the talks that I was giving, my dreams were almost regularly essential parts of what I was talking about. They were like the scriptures or the texts that were coming from the other realms that would inform what I was speaking about and sort of illuminate or give a story or give images and symbols that worked with whatever the subject was that I was speaking about. So it became a very integral part of what I did. So 20 years later, I did resign from that ministry for a lot of personal reasons. And at that point, because of my fascination with the dreaming, I went to get a doctorate in depth psychology so that I could study Jung and Freud. And at that point, learn a more scientific approach to how to work with dreams. So I got my PhD in depth psychology. And during that period, dissertation and my doctoral work was mostly around what I came to have a deep fascination for, which is the ways of knowing of Indigenous people. So I studied with Indigenous elders, and my dissertation was entitled Reawakening Indigenous Sensibilities in the Western Psyche. So I had many Indigenous teachers through that era of my life. And for the Indigenous people, the dream was central to their connection to the great conversation, you know, the more than human world and the deities and beings and in the great spirit and, you know, all the ways that they address the other world. The dreams were the main portals and source of information. So that again was very consistent. So when I started my own retreat center in 2004, I moved from Los Angeles to North Carolina and bought some land here and started a retreat center. And we were doing vision quests, and I was doing a lot of work with the Indigenous mind, but the dreams was very central to what I did. And that's the part that's carried through. I sold my retreat center and moved into Asheville here in North Carolina, and have been working privately and in groups and retreats with people's dreams a lot ever since. So I do private work, but I also do a lot of teaching and lecturing and courses and so forth about dreams. So it's the dreams just seem to have been the through line in my life, in my passion, in my interest, something that I work with on a daily basis. So
Wonderful. I think what you've sort of highlighted, especially from your own personal experience, is that dreams are so important to us all. So how can they truly direct us, especially in our modern world when we're also often disconnected, or we may dismiss something that's coming through from our psyche that, you know, we dream at night if we do remember them, as being sort of guide markers or having this importance in our waking lives?
Right, exactly. Well, when we begin to realize that everything is dreaming, the earth is dreaming, animals dream, babies dream, you know, the every scripture of the world talks about the guidance of the dreams. Muhammad got the Quran in a dream. Buddha's five dreams were the basis for all of his teachings and philosophy, his five major dreams. You can look them up and find them. They're amazing. And once we kind of begin to recognize the value, the deep and historical value of being in touch with the dreaming, and then just tell our dreaming mind that we're interested. Because I think a lot of people don't remember dreams. I hear people all the time say, you know, that's awesome that you work with that, but I don't remember my dreams of the night. And so my response to that is twofold. One is, you're never not dreaming. We're always dreaming, awake and asleep. The dreaming mind is always active. And so it's just an aspect of mind that we have, which I can talk about more later, sort of lost touch with the Age of Enlightenment and the Age of Reason, and all of that came in and sort of shut out these huge territories of our own soul and psyche. And so we're always dreaming. So nobody should think I don't dream. So, this isn't as an area that I will decide to explore because I don't have that gift. Well, we all do, and we all are, on the one hand. And also, once you decide that it's important, and you begin to turn your attention to wanting to discover that aspect of our being and our relationship to everything that is, then the dreams can start to awaken. That's where we start to awaken to the dreams of the night. And what I always say is take a little like pad and paper and have it next to your bed. And when you go to sleep at night, look at it and make an intention to remember your dreams. And it takes practice. It takes intention. It takes practice for those who, are just trying to start to wake it up. And if you get up in the night for any reason, if you can catch before you get up to go to the restroom or whatever, get a glass of water, whatever it is, if you can catch where you've just been, and then when you do that in the morning, if you can catch where you've just been before you put your feet on the floor or even before you turn your body, and tell yourself, as one of my dream teachers used to say, roll your eyes back instead of forward, and to ask where was I just now, and try to get it into your waking consciousness. And then in the middle of the night, what I do, and it works for me mostly, not always, is I, without even opening my eyes, I reach over and I scribble on the page, any little tiny words and notes about the dream that then will help me when I wake up in the morning to pull the dream memory back. So you can do that. You can train yourself to do that, and without waking yourself up too much, because sleep's too important to, to risk not getting back to sleep. However, we can train ourselves to make a record of our dreams. And then I advise people always to keep their dreams in their own journal. Do I have one of my journals here? No, they're all in the other room. I have a whole bookcase of dream journals. I've been using the same book since I was 24. So I have a whole long bookcase, 300 page book journal books of dreams. And it's nice to keep them in a bound place that is just for the dreaming, and to write them down and write their own narrative down as soon as you can early in the day. And that again is a practice. It's a discipline. It's an intention that we make, and it doesn't have to take more than 10 minutes if we don't have it. If we can spend more time with it, that's beautiful. And then we are taught to always write the dream in the present tense. Like, don't say, I was at a lecture hall. You say, I am in a lecture hall. So you put yourself present in it and write it down as though it's present, because the thing to know about the dream is it is now. It is happening now. And as Jung says, the dream is a psychic fact. So we can think, oh, that was nonsense, or that doesn't matter, or that one don't count, or whatever. But the dream is a psychic fact. And so if we start to understand the language of the dream, the symbolic language of the dream, we can realize that it is true, and it is true now. And Freud and Jung and others always say that the dream is coming to us now for an important reason. So it relates to our life in the present. It is trying to help us get our feet on the ground to understand what's going on in our soul, in our psyche, in our world in the present. And there's something in the 24, 48 hours just before or just after the dream that the dream is referring to and is triggered by. It may have a deep soul history related to it, but it's triggered now, and it is helpful for now. So it's good to know that it's coming to us for a reason, to help us in our waking life right now. And then you just work with the symbols in the dream. Like, if you're dreaming of an old friend, you might think of what that person represents to you. what are the qualities in that person that might be similar to the qualities in yourself that are being referred to? Or what was the era of your life when you knew this person? It might be referring to your high school years then, if it was somebody in that era. And so the dream might be asking you to look at the identity that you formed or the image of yourself that you formed during that life that might be up for some kind of review right now, or that might be triggered right now. So we always look at the symbols in the dream and know that and make associations to what do they make us think of? And you can start to really consider what it is. And I find my dreams, the intelligence in my dreams, regularly orienting me in my waking life. And I could tell lots of examples of that. Yeah. Do you want me to tell an example or two?
More than welcome to if you've got one to share. I just like the fact that you just mentioned, you know, when people appear in our dreams, they're not necessarily that person. They're just an aspect of what we can identify with in relation to that person, or, as you said, that era of when that person appeared in our life.
Right. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Everything in the dream can be just itself, but it's also a symbol or an image for something else that's going on in our psychological and our soul life. So it's always referring to something that's relevant and important. And I like to say this about dreams, that the dreams are always helping us get back to our true self, our authentic self, the self that is the capital S self, as Jung puts it. And I always like to think of E.E. Cummings. There was a poem, I think he had a quote of his that says, "To be nobody but yourself in a world that is trying to make you into everybody else is the hardest battle to fight, and you never stop fighting." And the dream doesn't care about what everybody else wants us to be. It only cares about who we are and helping us to develop our own authentic self, which may be a stranger to us because it's never been mirrored to us, or we've never had the chance to develop it. So it may seem very strange at first when we start meeting the authenticity of who we actually are. But once we begin to resonate with it and understand it, and it keeps insisting, we can learn it's about becoming who we truly authentically are. And that, as E. Cummings says, is the hardest battle that we ever fight. It's like the whole world wants us to be whatever it thinks we should be, or, you know, starting with, you know, family culture, the culture that we're raised in, our peer group, our academic group, our, you know, social, cultural, national, whatever, all those things, you know, we think that we have to live up to these identities that may or may not relate to anything about who we are and our authentic, unique self. And the dream is always in service to getting us back into and awakening that true self in us, and getting us in touch with the forces that will support that journey for us.
Yeah. No, I find that really interesting, especially in our modern world too, with social media and people who are familiar with my work. I know I find social media a bit of a double-edged sword. It's great for sharing information and being in touch with people, but it also puts up these images that if we're not confident in our own self, we feel that we need to. This is images of success, and more drives us away from, as you mentioned, our authentic self, our true soul, our true sense of being and connected in this world. And it's great that something that we have easy access to, like our dreams, once we become aware of them, helps us and can guide us back to that deep connection, which is, I guess, a theme of this conference, of reawakening, yeah, our sacred self, and removing those veils that have been built up by our environment that in which we live in.
Yes, right. Yes. Social media is a double-edged sword, especially for teenagers. You know, I really am glad I didn't grow up in an era of trying to put my image out there and then hiding my true self behind that image and not even recognizing after a point that, you know, who you truly are. You're just living up to this image that you project onto a screen out there. It's just, you know, it's very hard. And I've heard lots of teenagers discuss that challenge, you know, and you know, it's a hard edge. So I think it's something we have to wake up to. And the dreams, I think, if we could teach our young people to listen to their dreams, that could be very encouraging for them to hear their own voice in their own connection to what's really going on. Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to also now pick up on it, sort of ties in with what we've just been discussing. Something that you mentioned earlier in part of your own training, and please correct me if I haven't got this incorrect, but part of your training or your dissertation was the Indigenous awareness in the Western psychology or psyche. Now, I find this very an interesting concept because coming from a Western or Caucasian background, when I personally think of the word Indigenous, I think of like here in Australia, we've got the Aboriginal peoples, we've got the Native American peoples, we've got the people that today are Indigenous of their land. So, where is this Indigenous culture within the Western psyche? Do we still have it? Was it always there? Have we forgotten about it?
Thank you for asking that. I really like that. That to me was central to my doctoral work. Was w once I, it's interesting. Once I was initiated into the Indigenous mind, which is its own story, I guess I won't tell here, but I felt like it shattered my whole world as it was. It was like the Indigenous person inside of me woke up and said, "Oh boy, no, we're going to change all this." And that's what happened. It all changed. I resigned from the ministry, and you know, it went on and on. It with my marriage, everything went with that. So, but to me, I felt to get in touch with that part of the self that is ancient, that we all, every person, Western, Eastern, North, South, up, below, anywhere, have an Indigenous heart and an Indigenous soul, that all of our ancestors lived in an Indigenous way. Up until the modern era, all of our ancestors lived in an Indigenous way and had these ways of knowing that we're in touch with the invisible realms and in touch with the more than human realms, knew how to connect with the wisdom of the animals, what the animals are telling and teaching us. They watched the animals to know what they needed to do next because the animals were sensing, you know, when drought was going to come or when winter was going to come or when the, you know, it's like being in touch with that whole intelligence of the wind. The, you know, all of the aspects of nature that are consistently, as Thomas Berry, who's one of my teachers, used to say, that all of nature, all these voices are in consistently in a in what he called the great conversation. And that in the recent era, since the Enlightenment or the Age of Reason, humans stepped out of the great conversation. We're just talking to each other and talking to ourselves, and we've forgotten that we're part of this whole fabric of intelligence. And once we did that, we have gone insane, basically. We've started to, I mean, it only, as one teacher said, Brian Swimmy said, we're the only species on the planet that destroys its own nest. You know, here we are destroying our own capacity to survive on the planet because we've kind of gone insane by not listening to the Indigenous aspect of our being. Indigenous people would not pour toxic poison into the air or the waters because they it would be the same as injecting it into their own veins or that of their children. They just wouldn't. They would know. But somehow we lost that intelligence, and that's because we lost our way with the Indigenous mind and the Indigenous ways of knowing. And in being in touch with all the elements of nature, of which we are just one small integral part. And the dreams, you know, the dreams are the part of us that is consistently in touch with all of that. And I'm thinking of a story of Carl Jung when he went to Africa. He was very moved by, if you read his autobiography, Memories, Dreams, Reflections, he tells the story. He was very moved when he went to Africa. I think it really shook his soul in a big way when he met up with the indigenous way, and it just like really, really sunk in. And he talks about, he talked to the Laban, which is the name of one of the, you know, the great medicine person in the tribe. And he asked him, you know, about their dreams. And he said, this would have been in the early part of the 1900s. Jung died in the 50s, so it would have been around then. The Laban said to him that they used to always, all their people always lived by the dreams. The dreams would tell them when to hunt, when to plant, you know, what was, if danger, sickness was coming, what to do in every way. And he said, but since the white man came, the dreams stopped. And he said, because the English knew better. And that really struck me when I heard that, because it's like all of this power of connection to the dreaming stopped because of it's like the solar light of the rational mind, just like, it just like melts it all, melts the sort of mist through which they see in these other realms. And so that's what when I heard that, I thought, that's what's happened to all of us. Our rationally developed mind has just zapped our connection to all these voices, but it can be recovered. And in my sense, it has to be recovered because we've forgotten who we are. And this is who we are as humans, as a part of this fabric of life. And so the indigenous ways of knowing, of being in touch with all the elements and the invisible spirits that are always guiding us, you know, and the voice of the sun and the voice of the moon and all of these ways of knowing are still in us, and they can be revived. It's like it's something latent that has gone to sleep, and we can reawaken it, and we will get back in balance with ourselves, with the earth. And it's important. And I think the dreams are a main function of how to do that. They're a main like portal into that realm of our own self, our own wisdom, our own knowing, and the intelligence and the conversation, the great conversation of the world. So the dreams are always trying to bring us back to this truth of who we are and how we can be in harmony together. So.
Yes, I know where I am in Australia, the Aboriginal people here, they have what they call the dream time. And it's more than, say, just night dreams. It's their sacred lore. It's their connection. It's their stories, how, you know, everything created. But it's more than that. It tells them how to walk upon the land. It tells them about their relationships with all the other beings, the animals, where to find water out the desert.
Yes.
How to survive and work together with every other species in their area. And as you said, it's like, especially the Western mind, we have lost that, which is interesting too, that within our own Western psyche, we do have that knowledge somewhere. And it's just up to us to start taking responsibility, I guess, is the big word, of our dreams and reassessing where we are and the connection of not only our own lifestyle, our own way of living, but also, as you said, we're the only species who has basically is trying to destroy our own nest. That is just so.
Right. Yeah. It's so pathological what we're doing. And we don't even know that we've entered into this madness. That's the thing. But once we wake up to it, we can recover. And I'm so glad you mentioned the dream time, because it was so important to me when I started reading the Aboriginal work. There's a book called Voices of the First Day by Robert Lawler. Do you know that book?
Yes,
I
I
love
do.
it. And I think that was the first one where I encountered his whole discussion of the dream time. And that's when I kind of woke up. It's like, oh, the dreaming is a dimension of the psyche. It's always there. We're always in it. And it made me think that when I was a child, like at school, when I'd be looking out the window, I'd be in this other dimension, and my teacher would say, call me back and tell me to look at what was on the blackboard or what the conversation was. I was always having to be called back, and that's fine. I needed to do that to learn. But it was like I was always sort of in this sort of dream time, in this dreaming way. And I would love to go out where I could just be in it and somebody wasn't calling me back to play. That's what kids do when they're playing. They're just in that sort of dreaming. But I think it was in Robert Lawler's book, but in many of the writings about it, the Aboriginals would say that the Western person has gone insane because we only dream when we're sleeping, and they can walk in and out of the dream time, waking and sleeping. So it's a dimension of the soul, of the psyche that you can inhabit, that inhabits, that we do inhabit. We've just like shut the our senses down, but if we reawaken the senses, we're always in it. It's always in us. And the dreaming is always going on. And that's being in the dream time where we're in touch with all the dimensions, all the realms, all the timelines. They're all here for us. And the sort of multidimensional universe is available, and it's all working together anyway. We might as well get aware of it and be in it and work with it intelligently. And I think that dream time awareness is something to just know about ourselves. It's like an organ in our own psyche that we are not using. We're just, it's like, how can we be healthy if we're not using this major organ in the soul and the psyche? It's just so we can reclaim it. I had an interesting experience. I'll just tell that right now when we're talking about the dream time. A young fellow that met me through my work. He was in Australia, lived in Australia. He's a poet and beautiful young soul. But we had a few conversations. He won a raffle that I did about dreaming, about giving dream work away in one of the conferences or something. And so we talked a few times. And then he described to me a dream that he had of coming to my house. He described my house. He described my porch. He described the landscape around it. He described the person that was standing on the porch. He described my house. I mean, here he was in this dream. He described my porch, the landscape. The person on the porch was my daughter, described her perfectly. It was like he had been there, and I realized we know each other in the dream time. That's why we've made this connection in this time. Is that we're having this conversation, but we're totally colleagues and friends in the dream time. He described the whole thing. He saw it all. And my sister, who lived in India, used to describe me walking into her room and touching her on the forehead and saying something to her. And she always thought it was waking, even. It was so real to her, but I was here and not in India. But it's like these things are real. We have these sort of shamanic subtle bodies that walk around in the dream time. And if we can connect it to our consciousness, we will be so much more in touch with the fabric of life of which we are an integral part, and we'll function more intelligently, healthily, joyfully in it. I think our sadness and our sorrow is this sense of disconnection from all of that. And the fact that we've shut it down and we don't know what it is and we don't know how to revive it. And so there's so much suffering. And so much depression, so much suicide, and it's just it's it there's so many good re important reasons to revive all this.
And as you said, understanding and remembering our dreams is the first step into sort of healing ourselves as well, and dealing with all the mental stuff that's happening in our world. It's almost like it's escalated out of control. And we have this tool, we have this ability to reconnect. And as what you've described, the dream time, it's more than what, say, in the Western culture, we sort of dismiss it as just, I don't know, fantasy or, oh, yeah, it's just your dreams, don't worry about it. But the message, the healing, the importance of it has always been there, and the Indigenous people today know and are aware of it. We are also Indigenous people here in the West. We just have lost our connection to it, which is something that dreaming can bring us back to a sense of even self-worth as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's important to know that the dream, as I'm glad you said that thing about self-worth, because the dream, as Jung used these words, it's always on our side. It's never coming to admonish or shame us. It's coming to awaken us and help us. And if there are dangers and terrors, it's telling us aspects of our soul and our psyche that we can revive and get back in touch with. Just to know that the dream is always our friend, and it always believes in us, and it always is waking us up to a bigger sense of who we are. Yes, absolutely.
Now, just sort of like tying in with that, we may have mentioned off camera that you use the term dream thinking. Is this the same as dream time, or could you sort of unpack a little bit more about what dream thinking is all about?
Yes. Let's see. Yeah, I can talk about that. Jung, who, my doctorate's in Jungian psychology, so I do quote him a lot, and I think through his thinking a lot, and he's so brilliant. But he used the term directed thinking, and that is the style of thinking that is able to focus, like when the teacher's calling me back from my, spirit that just went out that window in the classroom, back to the classroom. We've developed directed thinking where we're just focusing a little bit with blinders on, and that's how we develop the scientific era, and there's a lot of value and blessings that we have, medicine, all the science, and all of that has come from this very directed thinking. But he said it is only a very recent adaptation of the human mind, and that when it's meant to be in service to this other aspect of mind that we're talking about, the dream mind, dreaming mind. And Heidegger used the term technical thinking, and this is the thinking now that's running our lives, and that we're trained in school, we're trained out of the other ways of thinking, and trained into the technological thinking and the directed thinking, and we're taught that this is the ruling principle of how to be and how to think in the world. Levi-Strauss called it the domesticated mind. It's like mind itself has become this domesticated thing, like a little animal that doesn't even know how to live in the wild, because it's all domesticated, and that's who we are. Well, this wild is us, and we need to recover our connection to it. And so dream thinking is the ability to think outside the directed thinking and put directed thinking in service to the heart, basically the thought of the heart, which is where the dreams come from, which is where our true thinking apparatus is. That's what all the Indigenous people say. And this is where we're in touch with everything that is. And so the directed thinking is meant to be in service to that. So to remember how to be with this other aspect of mind that I call dream thinking. It's like it's mythological thinking. It's thinking in symbols, it's thinking in images, it's thinking in, sometimes I think of like if you think of a big cat who is sitting in the sun just all day long, just chewing on the grass and sitting there. That cat is not doing directed thinking. He's so awake, so alert, so aware. What is that cat aware of by just being like that? And I think that's an aspect of ourselves. Instead of being busy, 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 What is that part of ourselves that could sit in the sun all afternoon and chew the grass and be completely alert of the stars and the wind and the everything else, and be in alignment and connection to this bigger picture? If we could, I keep getting the message at different times in my life, don't think, don't think. It's about just being awake in the mind. It's not about thinking, thinking, thinking. So dream thinking is the not thinking in that sense too, but it's thinking in images and symbols and myths and stories. And yeah, it's an aspect of mind that we can recover.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, I go ahead.
I'll just go to say that we tend to get too linear and wanting explanations. It's probably the scientific nature of our world today, as opposed to just being and allowing, the grass just to be grass. It doesn't have to be anything else.
Right.
And just, as you said, moving from the head to the heart.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And that, so it seems to, even just talking about, just thinking about it, it's almost like the whole energy is just sort of like dropped and calmed a little bit more. So we're bringing it sort of like the thoughts, external thoughts back internal, and then everything can just center down again. And I suppose that's the fascination and the benefit to us about dream thinking, dream time, being in more and more connection with our dreams. Sometimes symbols are just symbols, and we don't need to overanalyze things in our life.
Right. Yeah, in that calm place that you just pointed to, let me read this little poem by Lawrence Vanderpost. It's kind of brief, but it's so beautiful, and it sort of speaks to that. It's called The Silence of the Stars. When Lawrence Vanderpost one night in the Kalahari Desert told the Bushmen he couldn't hear the stars. Actually, this isn't Lawrence Vanderpost, it's David White, I think, that wrote this. Oh, I think I've got it wrong. Anyway,
yep.
The Silence of the Stars. When Lawrence Vanderpost one night in the Kalahari Desert told the Bushmen he couldn't hear the stars singing, he couldn't hear the stars singing, they didn't believe him. They looked at him, half smiling. They examined his face to see whether he was joking or deceiving them. Then two of those small men who plant nothing, who have almost nothing to hunt, who live on almost nothing, and with no one but themselves, led him away from the crackling thorn scrub fire and stood with him under the night sky and listened. One of them whispered, "Do you not hear them now?" Vanderpost listened, not wanting to disbelieve, but had to answer, "Nope." They walked him slowly, like a sick man, to the small, dim circle of firelight and told him they were terribly sorry, and he felt sorrier for himself and blamed his ancestors for their strange loss of hearing, which was his loss now. So may we step away from the fire and learn to hear the stars singing again.
That's absolutely beautiful and so sad as well, because as we've been discussing, we too can't hear the stars singing. But as we are approaching the end of our interview time, Taria, I want you to speak a little bit about your Global Community Dream Symposium that you have, and you're inviting everybody who's participating in this conference to join, because this is a way to help us listen and hear the stars again.
Yes, yes, thank you. Jocelyn Starfeather, a colleague and friend of mine, and I know you're of yours, she and I were talking about dreams, this was in 2016, 17. And I was telling her, I listen to people's dreams. You know, they come into my office one at a time, and I'm hearing these like fabulous themes that are coming, people that don't know each other, and this all one sort of fabric of intelligence that we need to connect, you know, the stories that are being told in these dreams. And I kept feeling like these are not just for me, these are for everybody, these stories that I'm hearing, and the wisdom that I'm hearing, and the themes that were emerging in the collective dreaming. So Jocelyn and I came up with the idea of starting a global community dream symposium where people come, and people from all over the world. There are people on in so many different countries and continents that come to our monthly dream symposium. We've been doing it since 2019, so what's this about, going on 6 years now? We have a monthly symposium where we listen to each other's dreams. And so if you click on the link that you will be providing, you
All
can
this
register.
below.
Yes. You can register for the Dream Symposium, and once you register, you will get the announcements of when the Dream Symposiums are each month. They're always on a Friday, and they're at noon Eastern time, once a month. Actually, next month we're not having it because Jocelyn will be in Egypt, but there's only like 2 months we've missed in all these 6 years. So they're generally pretty regular. And then come and listen to the dreams and listen to what the dreaming is saying, and bring your own dreams. And if you don't have a dream, that's fine. We all benefit from hearing what the community dreaming is saying, just as the indigenous people always did and still do listen to the community dreams. So this is what we're doing. So everyone is welcome to come, and they're free, and you're invited. And if you can't be there when we're doing it live, if you're registered, you'll get the recording after, so you can hear it. And some people who like live where you live, who can't make it sometime when we're having it because of the time zone, listen afterwards and then send me their dreams, and I can read their dreams the next time we have a symposium. It becomes quite a conversation, and it really does awaken our connection in the dreaming, and our connection to the dream time, in our dreaming self. So everyone is welcome. Everybody's invited. You're all, we'd love to see you there.
That sounds fantastic. And I said all the links to the Dream Symposium and also Taria's website are listed below this recording. As we have been discussing, connecting back into our dreams, even if we don't have a dream of our own, listening to the collective stories is so important, especially at this critical time. So, as on the planet, we feel we may have lost our way. So, it will help us reconnect back to our sacred self and to our ancestral soul and to what is really important in our modern life. So, Taria, it's unfortunate that we're running out of time. I would love to continue this conversation with you. So, once again, thank you very much for your wonderful and inspiring insight into dreams. It's been a complete honor to have you sharing your knowledge with us.
Well, thank you so much for making this occasion for everyone to come together with all the wisdom. I can't wait to hear your other speakers. And I really appreciate your invitation. I love talking about this, obviously. I'm very passionate about it. And anyone who wants to learn more about dreams and how to work with them, on my website, there's a videos page. There's lots of different things that I offer. And on my DreamWork page, there's a whole course that I give on how to work with your dreams. So, and it's all free. So, there's a lot of information and things to read on my website about the indigenous mind and all of that too. So all that's free. You're welcome. And if you want to sign up on my homepage, to be on my newsletter, you'll know when there's something coming up that you might be interested in. So I'd love to have you follow my newsletter, which only comes out once or twice a month. It's not, I'm not one of those that sends several a day. Some people do, and they're great because they've got so much to say, but mine's usually just a couple times a month. So if you sign up, you'll get news of what's going on with this work.
Sounds fantastic. The website is tariaward.com. As I said, the links are listed below. So please take advantage of not only the Dream Symposium, it sounds fantastic, but also all the other offerings that Taria has. So to everybody who's watching this, Natalia, thank you. I hope you have enjoyed watching this and listening to Taria as much as I have. And I look forward to seeing you again. Bless.